Do you believe in the American dream? That myth, with its emphasis on self-reliance and individual determination, might actually be making us less healthy, less secure, and less fulfilled, according to award-winning journalist Alyssa Quart in her new book, Bootstrapped: Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream. Alyssa is the executive director of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project and has written for many publications, including the New York Times, the Washington Post, and Time magazine. Here she is to share five of her big ideas.
Hi, I'm Alyssa Quart. I'm the author of Bootstrapped: Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream and Squeezed: Why Our Families Can't Afford America, as well as a number of other books. I'm also the executive director of the Economic Hardship Reporting Project. I'm going to share with you five of the key insights from my book. The first insight is that no one is actually self-made. It's been a questionable idea ever since the term was first coined in the 1830s by the Kentucky representative Henry Clay. He used the phrase in the U.S. Senate to praise his state's manufacturers. It's a notion you can succeed without help from your relatives, your government, or your community. In Clay's case, it also meant the entrepreneurs of his state were being praised for being self-propelled, ignoring the fact that those actually doing the work were enslaved. In the two centuries since, claiming to be self-made has become a signature of a wide range of people, from those at the top of Silicon Valley to former President Donald Trump. But while it's tempting to see yourself as self-sufficient or even self-invented, most who do have been dependent on others for their creations. Being truly self-made is impossible. I always say, if you think you're self-made, call your mother. To claim we've acted with utter independence means we're denying something, ignoring the role of our parents, teachers, caretakers, or wealth, gender, race, and inherited property. There's a delusion when people say of their financial success, I did it alone. They're denying the web of relatedness that we all dwell in. This fantasy also shapes some voters' choice of leaders, drawn most to those who insist they have succeeded entirely by themselves. This has had, I believe, a detrimental effect in American politics. So let's retire the concept of the self-made. Kylie Jenner is not self-made, and neither are you nor me. Insight number two, pulling yourself up by your bootstraps story is toxic. The idea that we can and must pull ourselves up by our bootstraps is not only really hard to imagine. I mean, how would you pull yourself up by your bootstraps? It's also kind of toxic. It insists on an isolating and draining individualism. In truth, we're social creatures. We find strength in reciprocity and giving. We find meaning in belonging. It doesn't help that pulling yourself up with your bootstraps comes along with a helping of either self-blame or blaming other people. According to pollsters, an inordinate number of middle-class Americans believe that if they didn't make it, it's because of themselves. And they express self-loathing for any broader setbacks in their lives. Another study found that half of Republicans agreed with the statement, people get stuck in poverty primarily because they make bad decisions or lack ambition to do better in life. This is the kind of thinking that hundreds of years of claiming everyone who wants to get ahead can do so brings us. This mindset is so pervasive, with people wondering what they have done wrong to wind up in their circumstances. And those who are poor have internalized this thinking. They fault themselves alone. According to a 2015 Oxford University study, poorer people tend to experience something called negative self-stereotyping. They even take in those media cliches that you see on cop shows and see themselves as low in competence. In other words, the bootstrap story harms many of us, with the potential exception of the richest. Insight number three, there's an art to interdependence. It takes craft and skill to be interdependent. It also takes skill to be dependent on other people. Mutual dependence is, in fact, our natural condition. And I call the ability to be gracefully needy of others and institutions the art of dependence. I think we should not only celebrate independence, we do that with little kids from a young age, but also when we lean on each other, we should be celebrating that. What do I mean by that? It means accepting aid with magnanimousness and crucially recognizing the importance of others in making us who we are in our successes. It takes dignity to ask for help from friends, loved ones, colleagues, and to negotiate the welfare system, SNAP, and unemployment. Admitting to need and asking for help, even filling out forms for, say, student financial aid, shouldn't be embarrassing. We can reframe it as a way of more intensely engaging with society. Asking for help can even involve heroism. In a country that stigmatizes dependence, acknowledging need takes strength. Insight number four, the feeling is mutual. There are ways in which ordinary people are building a new American dream, one that's closer to the original American dream from 1931, which was really about community. We should follow their lead and join them. These new directions can be surprising. They include people who have created peer-to-peer therapy groups and are rejecting the insistence that they become mindful on the job when their jobs are just too hard for them to bear. Another example of the new American dreamers are those who are joining mutual aids. They rose up throughout the country during the pandemic. So in a mutual aid, people are both givers and receivers. When we embrace the mutual in our lives, our work goes faster and we are less anxious and depressed. As human beings, we are biologically wired to be in relation with each other, our minds and bodies regulated by one another. In other words, it's like not natural to be alone, to be isolated, to be individual successes. The new American dream can be seen in alternative labor groups, gig workers. I hung out with people who work for Uber and for Instacart, who were joining new groups that were trying to get resources for themselves during the pandemic, or brain workers at museums or universities who are picketing for higher salaries for the first time. It's also found in workers entering the workplaces on different terms. This includes worker owners of today's worker cooperatives. So a worker owner is someone who has both a share in the business and does the labor. It also includes participatory budgeting groups that have emerged in cities around the country, holding local governments accountable. They're ordinary people learning the ins and outs of, you know, what it takes to get new bathrooms installed or new cutaways in sidewalks or a new statue. And they link up with other residents to help shift millions of municipal dollars in creating new neighborhood resources. Insight number five is the dystopian social safety net. Sometimes volunteerism and citizen collective efforts are not enough to help us with our societal ills. It's the only answer we have often, but the resulting effect is something I call the dystopian social safety net. I created this to describe programs or crowdfunding arrangements that should not exist, yet we rely on them heavily. I talked to a number of people who depend on these platforms. They're hoping that their medical needs for a new organ or for help during COVID would be relieved by an online charity drive. And that's because there isn't enough government aid. But I had this question, why should we be collecting money from friends and even near strangers on the internet to pay for our medical bills? The dystopian social safety net also includes nonprofits throughout the country that are forced to open warming centers and also safe parking initiatives where lots double as housing for those living in their cars. These spaces were meant to be briefly used by vehicles loading up on dog food, and now they've become overnight residences. The dystopian social safety net includes organizations that help us cover our copay when we receive surprising and wildly excessive medical bills. It includes the dental fairs. What I mean by that are free two-day dental clinics geared to the many people who cannot afford tooth care. Fewer than half of American dentists accept Medicaid, after all. These are fairs without Ferris wheels. The dystopian social safety net isn't bad unto itself. Its very existence, however, is a sign of societal ill health. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy my new book, Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream.
Thank you, Alyssa. That was five big ideas from Bootstrapped, Liberating Ourselves from the American Dream by Alyssa Quart. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.